copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
My name is Dave Patty, and I'm here also with some members of my family that I'm going to introduce in just a bit. And our topic is how to increase your kingdom impact by going from parents in ministry to family on mission. I assume that most of you have children. Is that right? Okay. Let's see. How many? Does anyone have more than four? All right. That's true family on mission. That's great. How many?
Eight.
Oh, my. Wow. We need like three missions for this one. Okay. And
five.
Great. So it'd be interesting to total up how many kids we have together, kind of that kingdom potential coming up in the next generation. And I'm sure you've thought about the fact that God's called you to ministry, and he also gave you kids, a lot of them. And you're thinking, how do these two things go together? For me, those questions came at several points. One of them, because, let me get this going right, I actually grew up in a family with missionary parents. I'm the guy, the bald guy on the right down there, sitting down there. And that picture was actually taken in the Philippines, where my parents served as missionaries and where I was born. So I grew up in a mission home, in a ministry home, and the ministry actually went on in our house. It was ministry to sailors who were in the American military, and my mom would sometimes cook food for 70 sailors, these men that were coming off the ship. And they would all invade our house. We had kind of a big extended house. And you can imagine, it would be really easy for kids to get lost in that. And so my parents were asking the question, how do we fulfill our calling that really involves our kids and not ruin them along the way? You know, how do we put those things together? And that same question came to me when we started having kids. And this is a picture of my wife. My wife's back here. Connie, raise your hand there. That's my wife. That's what she looks like now. This was our first couple of weeks in a town not far from here called Havajov, the town of miners in the Czech Republic, where God called us almost 25 years ago. And so there we have small kids. There you can see me. Our first day, I'm kind of looking dazed at the doorway of the house we're going to move into. And God had called us to this city and to this country to serve him there. And I was thinking, okay, I've got kids, I've got a calling, how do the two kind of go together? And you can see as things grew, we had a youth ministry that met in our home, and our kids were kind of in the middle of it. And one of my questions were, okay, is this good for them? Is this bad for them? Are they going to feel neglected or included? Are we ruining them? Or what's going on? As they grew, you can see, actually, there they... you're going to see Claire here in a minute. That's Claire when she was young. There we are. And there's our kids right in the middle of things. And as they grew older, that's them as they're getting older. And my dream was always this. How can the call of God on my life for ministry be a blessing to my children? How can my children actually turn out better because I'm in ministry rather than worse? So this is, I also have the privilege of having not only my wife and my daughter here. Claire, why don't you stand up here? And that's my daughter, Claire. You saw a picture of her when she was very young. And she has just, she spent the last several years in the United States working on her Bible degree, and she's just returned to our team. I now lead a ministry called Josiah Venture that has about 350 full-time staff in 14 countries here. And one of the things that we want is we want not only the parents to do a good job in ministry, we want the families to be on mission and the kids to grow up well. And actually, Claire finished her degree in Bible and children's ministry and has come back on our team to help the families raise kids well in the middle of ministry, which is just really something. And one of the reasons why I wanted her here today is she's just finished a study, a kind of a deep dive study where she did 52, is that right? 52 one-hour interviews with either parents or children in ministry, asking the question, what makes you thrive when your parents are in ministry? What makes it hard? And she's going to be telling some of the results of her study today. So I'm really excited about that. So we're going to kind of go back and forth. But she's in the trenches helping families do this. And just these are some of the kids that she's responsible for, helping them be healthy as their parents are in ministry and helping their parents also know how to do that well. So that's going to be her perspective that she gives this, which I'm really excited about. Now, I told you that I grew up in a missionary family, and I also grew up around other families whose parents were involved in ministry. And one of them was my friend Dan Hash, who today is serving the Lord full time. Another one who was part of the same group of kids we hung around with, his name was Paul, and Paul ended up in jail and finally committing suicide, very far from God. And both of those were ministry families. And I remember growing up thinking, what's going on? What's the difference? Why such a wide range of results? And actually, Paul would say, I'm resentful that my dad was in ministry because he was always gone, because I'm not sure that I always saw the same thing at home as I saw when he was out. I actually kind of lost my dad to ministry, Paul would say. So sometimes ministry actually can not be a good influence on our kids. And I remember when I was going to Bible college, the president of the college, his dad was actually one of the founders, and he grew up in a family with 11 children where they were always involved in ministry. And when he married his wife said, not our family. Maybe your family was that way, but not our family. I don't want our kids ruined by your ministry. And so she really felt like her job was to say, you have a job and that's your ministry. We want you to keep your job, your ministry at your job. Come home, leave it. You know, it's like other jobs. You want to leave your job at your job. Now come home and be with the kids. And because of that, the 3 years that I went to that Bible college, I never saw the children of the president of that college because his wife was very convinced that we have to protect the family from dad's ministry. So there's a wide range of different opinions. I don't know where you land, but there also are some interesting things we see in Scripture. And one of them is we see examples of dad or mom in ministry, but just in ministry. For instance, Samuel in 1 Samuel 2, 12 through 16. We find, well, if we pick it up in 11, it says, Elkanah went home to Ramah, but the boy, Samuel, ministered before the Lord under Eli the priest. Eli was a fabulous priest. He did really well. But verse 12, Eli's sons were wicked men. They had no regard for the Lord. So here you see Eli in ministry, and in fact, you see a lot of kind of sobering examples in Scripture of outstanding men and women in ministry and kids that were far from that. And another, we've been talking about, we'll be talking about David in our morning studies, and that was interesting that this morning he said David is mentioned more times than anyone else in the Bible. But look at this passage in 1 Kings 1, 5 through 6. David was a great king, but he actually wasn't the best father. And you find that it was kind of David in ministry. 1 Kings 1, 5 through 6. Here we have Adonijah, whose mother was Haggith, put himself forward and said, I will be king. So he got chariots and horses ready with 50 men to run ahead of him. And then there's this parenthesis in verse 6 that says, his father had never interfered with him by asking, why do you behave as you do? And it also says he was also very handsome, was born next after Absalom. So you see this amazing father and then a son that has no regard for the things that the father cares about. And that could be possible with any of our families. We have to recognize that we could end up with kids that end up in jail and far from God that we certainly don't want to. Wow. So what can we do anything to influence that? You also see mom and dad on mission. But maybe not necessarily that rolling over to the kids. In the book of Joshua, there's a very interesting passage in Joshua 24, verse 15, where at the end of Joshua's life, he calls people together, and in 15 he says, but if serving the Lord seems undesirable to you, then choose for yourselves this day whom you'll serve, whether the gods your forefathers served beyond the river, or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you're living. And then you hear Joshua say this, but as for me and my household, we will serve the Lord. Now, a little bit later on, look at verse 18. Everyone responds, we too will serve the Lord because he is our God. Do you notice any difference in what the people said and what Joshua said? Joshua said, me and my household. And the people said, we too will serve the Lord. So they were on mission. They were on mission. But look ahead to this, Judges 2, verses 6 through 10. Here it is right there. You go just a little bit farther forward and you find 10. We'll pick it up actually in 10. After that, the whole generation had been gathered to their fathers. Another generation grew up who neither knew the Lord nor what he'd done for Israel. Then the Israelites did evil in the eyes of the Lord and served the Baals. So it was gone in one generation. Just one generation. So we have mom and dad on mission, but somehow Joshua said it's going to be me and my household. It didn't pass on to the other households. Wow, so we've got some like difficult examples. And then we have some good ones. We actually have the best one of family on mission. We can find in Luke, amazing family on mission. Matthew, Mark, Luke. Chapter 2, verse 49. This is Jesus in the temple. His mom and dad are looking for him. They come and they say, why have you treated us like this? Your father and I have been anxiously searching for you. Verse 49, he says, why were you searching for me? He asked. Didn't you know I had to be in my father's house? Now, some of your translations maybe say, I need to be about my father's business. I don't know if any of you translate that. If you go to the Greek, it actually says, didn't you know I had to be in my father's? And there's no, it's an article without a noun. So that's why some people say, well, I meant in my father's house. But it's probably better, I need to be in the place where my father's, and that's why some people say about my father's business. I need to be in my father's business. I need to be in the place where my father is doing his thing. And that theme continues in the life of Jesus. John, I'll just throw the rest of these up here so you can look at them. We're going John 5:19. This theme continues. Jesus gave them this answer. I tell you the truth, the Son can do nothing by himself. He can only do what he sees his Father doing. Because whatever the Father does, the Son does also. And it's interesting, is Jesus is talking about his mission. He talks about it in family kinds of ways. He says, I'm part of a family. My Father and I are working on something together. In fact, I'm carrying on my Father's mission. And you don't see this sense of, my father pushed that on me, or I'm obligated. It actually, and of course we're talking about Jesus, we're talking about the Trinity, but still he talks about my father. I have joined my father in the family business, which is this, well, we'll find out what that business is in a minute. John 12, verse 49-50. For I did not speak of my own accord, but the Father who sent me commanded me what to say and how to say it. I know his commands lead to eternal life. So whatever I say is what the Father told me to say. Again, there's this sense of, hey, we're doing this as a family. And then John 20, 21. And Jesus said, peace be with you. As the Father sent me, I'm sending you. Which is also interesting that the family dynamic of the mission of God should continue. It comes from the Father and it's being sent on. And so because of that, I really believe in God's family. God's rescue mission is the family business. You know, you talk about family businesses. Are you in a family business? Well, in the family of God, the Father's rescue mission is the family business. And I think it's appropriate for God's rescue mission to be my family's business, to be the family business. Not my rescue mission, not my ministry, but I and our family are part of God's bigger family. And that we say, hey, that's what our family is about joining the Father on his rescue mission. That actually is what our lives revolve around. So this idea of family on mission is actually, I believe, part of God's method of redemption and part of why he said in Deuteronomy, pass these things on to your kids. So what would be, if that was true in my family, if that was true in your family, what could be some of the benefits of actually not being just mom and dad have a ministry or mom and dad have a mission, but we are family, our family is family on mission. And the mission that we're on is bigger than the ministry that my parents are called to. So it's not kids are helping parents fulfill their occupational call, but we together as a family are part of God's bigger family, and we're about the family. Our family is about the family business. Well, how could that possibly benefit your family? We're going to talk about how to do that in just a few minutes. But what could be some of the benefits if part of your family identity was, we're family on mission. We're family on mission. That's part of who we are. That's what it means to be part of this family. We're on mission. We're on God's rescue mission. What could be some of the benefits? Well, one of the benefits is actually, could actually make your family healthier. I told you I was born in the Philippines. My parents were missionaries there for 10 years. As I was getting older, I never ended up going there, but there was a school for missionary kids called Faith Academy. It was a boarding school. And my parents knew they probably would have to send me there to get an education. So my dad visited there and talked to the principal, and he said, wow, you have missionary children coming from all over Asia, coming to board here. You probably have problems with some of them. And the principal said, yes, we do. And he said, and some of them probably do really well. He says, yes, we do. He says, what's the difference between the children of people in ministry that do well and the children that don't do well? He says, I can tell in my first conversation with the kids how well they're going to do here at this school. My dad said, how? He says, I asked them just a couple of questions. And the answers to that tell me what's going to happen. He says, what are your questions? He said, you'll be surprised with the first one. The first question I ask the kids is, I say, what do your mom and dad do? And then I listen for their answer. And he says, some kids say, oh, I don't know, they go off to a building somewhere and do some work, or I think they're missionaries or something like that. And the kids don't really know what their parents do. He says, I always know I will have problems with those children. Isn't that interesting? And then he says, there's other kids that I say, what do my parents do? And they, with excited terms, talk in detail about my parents do this, and they get to share Jesus with these people, and this happens, and this happens. And you can tell that not only do they know what the parents are doing, but they're part of it. It's not mom and dad's job that they go off to, but it's our family. That's what we're doing as a family. And he says, those kids will do well. Very interesting, isn't it? So it could make a difference in your holistic family health if your kids view that mom and dad have a job that's called ministry, or that we as a family are on mission, which again, the mission is bigger than your occupational job. I wonder if I could ask, Claire, why don't you come up here for a minute, and I'm going to hand the mic to you, because one of the things you found in this study is the importance and also how young people reflect on whether it's family on mission. So here, I'm going to stand near you and go like that. So why don't you say something about that?
Well, first of all, I have to say one of the things that we have been shocked by with the JV kids, with the kids that we're working with, is that only a few of them have walked away from the faith over the 25
years
that JV has existed. So one of the questions that we've been asking in this deep dive is why? Why has that been true? And in our interviews, it's been amazing to find out that every single kid talks in some measure about family on mission. Sometimes they actually will say those words, but often it's indicated in the way that they talk that that's something that they value. And actually, just this last week, I talked with a JV Kid alum, because I had one last interview to do with her. And one of the things that she said, she grew up in Slovakia, she said, being on mission was part of my identity. It gave us a shared purpose as a family. It gave us a purpose for where we were. So actually, all the hard things that she was going through had purpose, because she knew why she was going through them, and she knew that there was a greater purpose as a family together that they were working towards and praying towards together.
All right. Let me ask you one other question. What was it like for you personally to grow up with in a family that was on mission? How old are you today, by the way?
I'm 23.
Okay. So.
Yeah. So I would say it's a similar aspect of it, where it truly became part of my identity, so that whenever I would go out someplace, even apart from my family, that was something that I carried with me too. And I really value that, because it changed who I became. And then as we would gather together as a family too, that was still a part of our conversations. And it completely changed my outlook on any new place that I walk into, or even long-term relationships that I'm into.
Okay, great. Good. You're going to hear more from Claire, but thank you for jumping in there. So it can actually increase your family health if your family is on mission. Let me see if I can get this clipped back on. Here's another just benefit is disciple making of those closest first. So we're to make disciples. And it is interesting how sometimes it's kind of like the cobbler's kids who have no shoes. Yeah, sometimes we neglect the people that are closest. But biblically, we're supposed to care first. In fact, I feel like in the order of importance, my first order of importance is to walk with God, maintain my walk with God. That's this. I need to be plugged into the spring. And then the first place that should spill is into my marriage. I have a responsibility to maintain a healthy marriage and love my wife and let the life of Jesus flow over into that and make sure that she's doing well. And if she's not doing well, that immediately jumps to the top of my list. Then the next level out is kind of like concentric springs, that the water comes here and then it spills first into your marriage and the next into your family, making sure that you're discipling those around you. And it's not just making them happy or meeting all their needs. It's actually our call is to make disciples. So it's just like you would do everywhere else. You want people to grow. You want them to be changed in the image of Christ. You want them to be fruitful. Well, those are things we want for our family too, for our kids. And then the water spills out one more. I could think, well, all this lost energy by caring for my marriage and caring for my family, I could be spending that energy in ministry. But actually what you'll find is it will by far multiply the impact of your ministry. If it's like if it was just spilling out of my walk with God, I'd have just this much surface area that it was spilling from. It's spilling from my marriage. It's even more surface area. It's spilling from my entire family. There's all of that spill from a healthy family that's walking with Jesus that actually multiplies my impact. So not only do I love my family and care for my family because God wants me to, but I actually know it will change the impact of my ministry. I will have a more powerful ministry. And the other thing is, if they're unhealthy, the flow goes backwards. Have you ever known people who are great speakers and then you find out something about their marriage? Or are gifted leaders and then you meet their kids? And you'll find that if that's not taken care of, it actually pulls back and it can sabotage the impact of your ministry. So care for your marriage, care for your walk with God, and care for your marriage, and care for your kids, and realize that in doing that, you're actually fulfilling your calling. You're called to make disciples, but make disciples of your kids. Why skip that? Do that first. And Claire, I'm going to ask you back up here in a second. So were there ways, and I'm going to ask you about mom, not about me. So what were some of the particular ways that your mom actually discipled you, didn't just raise you, but discipled you? Can you say anything about that?
For sure. Well, if you knew my mom or if you know my mom, you know one of the things that she values most is prayer. And she is one of the strongest prayer warriors I know. And she discipled us in prayer as well. Every single night from the time I can remember, she would pray with us together before bed. And you might think, oh, that's something small, that's not much. But that's how I learned how to pray. That was part of our rhythms of life, and we would then celebrate the ways that God would answer. And then not only that, but when we would go to events where my dad was speaking, for example, there was this Christmas Eve service that would often happen on the public squares, and my dad would often be invited to speak at those services. And we would come along as a family, and we would get so excited because we would pray for the people who would be hearing the gospel message, and my dad would be up front, and we'd be with my mom, and we would be praying together here, and he would be up front, and we would get so excited that even though we weren't up front, we were usually in the very back just watching it all happen, we got to stand there and pray together and be a part of the mission together with my dad and together with my mom too. So she shepherded us in prayer a lot and often, even when my dad was gone or up front.
I'll stay up here for a second. Interesting sideline to that. One year I had an invitation to speak at one of those Christmas Eve things, and Claire was actually coming home from college, and I said, no, I want to be with my family. I'm not going to go to that. And she got back and she said, so are we going to one of those Christmas Eve services? I said, no, I said no so I could be with you. And her face fell. Well, that was just such a wonderful family experience. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we think, okay, we put life into boxes, like this is ministry, this is family. Why do we have to separate that? Why can't that be a wonderful family experience while we're on mission together, which is, sounds like what Jesus was doing. He was loving the Father in relationship with him. And that was another interesting one. Was one time I hadn't gotten any time with Claire, and so I said, let's go climb the mountain right near our house. And so we went up, and we were climbing up, and as we were climbing down, someone heard her speaking English and said, oh, you Americans, yeah. And they said, oh, we've been, and they wanted to talk. And they were talkers. And the whole way down, they keep asking us questions and talking. And I'm thinking, I have this wonderful time with my daughter, and it's getting interrupted by these people. And so I start slowing down and holding back and trying to get rid of them. And finally dumped them. And then we walked down a little bit further, and it was quiet for a bit. And then Claire said, Dad, I just got a question for you. How come you didn't share the gospel with them? And I went, because I was trying to get them away so I could spend time with you. And she said, they were so open, and I hear stories about how you turn conversations to where you talk about Jesus. And I was so looking forward to hearing you do it and watching you do it. And I'm kind of disappointed that you didn't. And I went, oh man, did I miss that? You know, like I'm thinking that ministry is robbing from my kids, and I'm not thinking that actually my calling, my mission, is a huge benefit to my kids. And I missed a wonderful opportunity to model evangelism because I just missed that. So anyways, you can sit down. And she's heard me share the gospel other times. So decide to make them those close. Increased impact. This actually is what I was talking about with the springs. It can increase the impact of your family. I kind of got a little bit ahead of myself. Clark, come back up here. Because you are interviewing these families. What are some of the ways in the interviews that you're finding that the children are extending the kingdom impact of their parents?
Mm-hmm. I remember in one of the interviews I had, one of the JV kids said, our church would not have a youth group if it weren't for me and my siblings, because we bring all of our classmates to youth group, and that's the youth group. And they were saying, that wouldn't exist if it weren't for us. And the other thing is that youth group wouldn't exist if their parents weren't there starting it. But one of the quotes that I remember from those interviews, too, is one of the kids who grew up in Poland, she said, I have a great love for my unbelieving friends. And at this point, she's now in California at a Christian college. And so she's in a very different kind of context where she's mostly around believers. And she said, those friends are valuable to me. I feel weird at a Christian college when it's all Christians. I feel like friendships with people who aren't Christians had a great value and purpose because I was also being a testimony. There was purpose to every one of those friendships. And
yeah, I'll just say that issue of purpose came up over and over again in the interviews. That the kids loved their life having a purpose, mm-hmm. which was created by Family on Mission, and that they gave context to everything else. And you probably, I don't know what else you want to say about that.
Yeah, just that these kids understand that the ways that they're seeing their parents model relationships get to be the ways that they walk into relationships as well. And actually, when they're in settings where they're not with unbelievers, they actually miss that.
Yeah. One girl said she went back to Christian college and she said, when things were hard before, when I was in a high school, she was from Sylvania, she said, I always knew that had a bigger purpose. I'm here for Jesus and for the gospel. When I'm in a Christian college and it's hard, I just go, what's the bigger point that makes it all worthwhile if it's just for me? So that sense of I'm living for something outside of myself, there's a bigger purpose that I've been drawn into, actually is something that's a huge gift to those kids. Okay, thank you, Claire. And then this last one is a generational legacy. And it says in Proverbs, it says a wise man... got to get this back on just a second. 13. Thirteen 22. A good man leaves an inheritance for his children's children, but a sinner's wealth is stored up for the righteous. So there can be a generational legacy that you leave for in your family. Now, you remember me telling you about my Bible college president who grew up in a family of 11 kids, became, his dad started the Bible college, he then became later a president, and his wife said, no way, that's not going to happen with our family. What's interesting is that none of his kids are walking with the Lord today. And so that effort that his wife went to protect her kids from the ministry actually damaged them, because they didn't have that that environment that would have shepherded them towards God. So, and obviously we have to invest in our families, but part of investing them is allowing them to join us on mission. Now, I'm going to give you some tips about how you can do that, but before that, I want to talk about four thieves of family on mission. And in your notes, if you got the PDF, this is actually at the end, so I'm bringing it up. Some things that actually will ruin family on mission and make it not work very well. One of them is mission to make a good impression. And sometimes people in ministry, if you're a pastor, if you're a Christian leader, your kids can really make you look bad. And that's not very pleasant. And sometimes that kids feel that the reason I'm disciplining or the reason I'm doing something is actually I'm wanting to make sure that they don't undermine my reputation, or I want to make sure that they boost my reputation. The mission is not a mission to make me look good. The mission that we're on is a mission, is God's rescue mission. It's following, serving Him. But sometimes that mission can become making sure that dad doesn't lose his reputation, making sure that mom and dad look good. And kids feel that in an instant. In fact, one of the things that comes up in any interviews with people, children in ministry, is one of the things that is the worst poison is hypocrisy. When they see mom and dad saying one thing and living another, or working to make impressions, which basically hypocrisy is acting, putting on a face, and they see that their parents are trying to bring them into it. Come on, you guys, lead music so that I can look good. Do this so that I can look good. When they feel that, oh, does that turn sour really fast? So this can be a subtle thief that we think that we're family on mission, but actually the mission can be make sure that don't undermine me, and young people, kids just sense that very, very quickly. Huge poison, hypocrisy. It comes up over and over again in family, and that was one of the things that came up in my friend Paul. He said, I watched my dad in front, I saw what he said, heard what he said, and then at home it was something different. How do I reconcile those two things? And he just ended up walking away with God. And the second one's related to it, mission to validate dad and mom. So sometimes mom and dad feel like, well, we haven't done very much, but our kids will. And they'll kind of redeem that. You know parents like that drive their kids everywhere for all the music lessons, or try to get their young people into college because they didn't finish college. And sometimes there's this sense that, hey, we aren't all that great, but our kids will be great and that will make us great. So it's not about making a good impression. It's actually about kind of redeeming my life. I'm going to live my life through my kids. And if you're trying to validate your worth by your kids, you're actually stealing worth from them to apply it to you. This is not about, I'm going to be someone because my kids turned out. It can't be about that. In fact, we have to always be stewards of these children. My children belong to God. I'm stewarding them. They belong to Him. I stand before Him and they stand before Him. He's their father. He's my father. And it's not about who gets the best grade for turning out the best kids. It's about how are we on God's father mission. Here's another one, is mission to clone the parents. One of our staff guys who grew up in a wonderful home, in fact, his dad discipled me, and he came on our staff. I found out after some time talking with him that he carried some real wounds from his childhood, from a very gifted dad in ministry, because his dad felt like, God's blessing me, I want God to bless you, so I just need to make you more like me. And so over and over again, his dad would say, hey, look, I do it this way, do the same thing. I think this way, do the same thing. And basically the message that this man got was, if you can be like me, then you'll be blessed. And he didn't sense how his son was different than he was. So it's not about it. You've got to say, God, my father has put something unique in my child, and I want to grow and express itself. It may be different than me. And this mission to clone the parents sometimes can be tough for kids. Claire, why don't you come back up here and just share some of your thoughts about this particular area?
Well, I'm going to share a story that was painful for me as a teenager. But I first have to say, this is something generally my parents have been really great about. They champion the strengths that people have. And so I always definitely felt support from my parents to step into places where God had gifted me rather than just stepping into places that were available or that they were gifted in. But there was a story when I was a teenager. So maybe if you know my parents' story at all, you know that they actually met because of music. That was intrinsic to their relationship and to their identities. They're really gifted musicians, and that was what brought them to Germany at first, and then that was ended up being the gateway to moving to Czech. So music was a big part of our family identity as well, and I loved aspects of that. We had worship nights together, and we would sing around the piano with my mom, and those were really sweet times. But then as I got older, I was invited to go to music lessons, and I was up for it. I was excited about it, but I just did not thrive in it. I could do it, but it did not come from my heart, and I knew it because I knew what it looked like for it to come out of my parents' hearts. And so I started asking the question, well, what would it mean if I didn't take lessons anymore? And my brothers were really gifted musicians too, so it was kind of a family ordeal that we're all musicians, and all of a sudden I was realizing I'm not, and I might not be, and what would happen if my parents found out that I actually wasn't? So I started to feel like the outsider, and I felt like I was going to be a disappointment to my family as well. And I really wrestled with that in myself, with the Lord, and with my parents in conversations too. They wanted me to stay for as long as possible and try it out and give it a chance. But then I ended up quitting, and it was a really difficult personal identity thing to walk through because I felt like I was failing my parents because I wasn't fitting into the mold that they thrived in ministry. Now, on the flip side of that, one of the sweet things that came out of that was that we got to talk through it, and we got to come to the other side and say, the Lord has created you differently, and that doesn't mean that you're separate from our family. So that brought really honest conversations that brought a lot of closeness and redemption at the end of it.
Okay. Great story. Thank you for sharing that. All right, and sometimes those kinds of things can be surprising. I remember when Connie came to me and said, Dave, I really think that we're trying to make Claire something different than she is. I was like, now wait, this is what the Patty family does. Well, not all the Patty family. Actually, she's tremendously gifted as an artist. How can we see those things and make sure? I needed help in saying that. So just, we had to talk about that. She had to be honest about it as well. Here's a fourth one. Missions that is controlled and owned rather than stirred or received. I have friends who are in two situations right now. One, a church that a friend of mine is serving in that has a founding pastor who is now moving towards retirement. And the only answer for his retirement is to pass on the church to his son, who everyone else is convinced is not the best one. But he has a sense that I poured my life into this church. It's kind of like a family business. And now I've got to pass on to my son. And it's actually causing huge leadership distortion in the church. Lots of problems. People respect this pastor. Why is this just going to go automatically to his son? So does the church belong to the pastor because he started it? Does it just get passed on to the son? I'm also aware of another ministry where same kind of thing. Someone started a ministry, started a church and a ministry. And right now, the three of the four elders are family members. It's all family controlled, all built in, and they really run it like a family-owned business that you can't break into. And that can really cause problems. So when we're talking about family on mission, the mission is not owned by us. It's entrusted to us. We've been entrusted the vision from God. We never own it. We're stewards. So it's like we've been stewarded with something that we'll do as long as we are stewarded, but it never belongs to us. And it's controlled by the head, which is Jesus. And so you want lots of owner, you want lots of engagement, but all engagement always as a steward with open hands, that ministry belongs to God, it's owned, it's controlled by Him. We have the privilege of serving in His vineyard, but make sure that family on mission doesn't mean that family-owned ministries. which causes a lot of distortion. We always have to say, no, we're family on God's ministry mission. The family that owns this ministry is the family of God, and Christ is the head of it, and we're stewards in the midst of it. Okay, any questions or comments on any of those before we go on to some specific things about how you can... have you seen any of those?
Well, you said hypocrisy is the poison.
Right.
So my question is, what is the...
What is the antidote? We're going to get to that. Yeah, actually, exactly. What's the antidote? We'll get that to that in just a second. Any others? Or you want me to just keep going? I'll just keep going. I can let you ask questions at the end. Here we go. 7 habits of family on mission. Here's some things that we found as we've studied family on mission that's been healthy, that you'll find that there's things that they do over and over again that become habits of the family. And here is the first one, which directs to your question. The habit of authenticity. The habit of authenticity. That there's not pretending in the family. And I think some of the things we don't realize is sometimes our failures teach stronger than our successes. And so if this is about disciple making and following Jesus, it's not about a perfect life. It's not about a perfect family. And that's not what we want to teach. It's about Jesus being enough. It's about the forgiveness of the Father. And I remember one particular memory. I have some memories from childhood of my ministry father, and one time where we had a huge argument in the living room, and I don't even remember what it was about. But I got really mad, and he responded in anger, and I walked out and slammed the door and walked down to my room and lay down on my bed, and I was just sobbing, and I was furious. And a few minutes later, I heard the door knock on the door, and my dad said, "Can I come in?" And I said, "Yeah," I didn't have a choice. I mean, he owns the house, so I have to let him in. So I said, "Yeah." He came down, sat down beside my bed, and he says, "Dave, I've just been thinking about our conversation. I responded in anger. That's not right. Would you forgive me?" I mean, that was just like, I was shocked. And I didn't even, I didn't even really let him know, you know, how much I was like, this is, whoa, what's going on right now? And I think I was more in the wrong. But he was apologizing. And then he said, "Dave, I just want you to know our relationship is very important to me. I don't want Satan to come in and destroy it in any way. So I want us both to protect this relationship. You're entering a time, as entering teenage years, where things are going to be tough. But can we just say, we'll talk it out. And I'm ready to say I'm sorry when I need to." Well, that was so, I mean, that's like forever in my memory. In fact, I was talking to my dad about it not long ago. He doesn't remember it. He doesn't remember it at all. I remember it forever. And sometimes we don't realize that some of the greatest teachable moments are those places of authenticity, those places where you say, "I'm really struggling right now. Would you pray for me? Wow, you know what? I failed in that. Would you forgive me? Oh, you're right." Because as we're modeling that, that's the thing that they're going to capture. So authenticity, and you find in all these families, you'll find that the kids will say, "Mom and Dad are exactly the same when they're up front as when they're at home. They talk the same there. They talk about the same things. There's not one conversation that goes on up front, and then we go home and we tear everyone apart in bitterness and hatred. It's the same thing." So build that habit of authenticity and a high value in your family. Here's the second one, conversation about mission. Conversation about mission. Again, this is not, you don't want to leave your work at the office, because this isn't a work. Your ministry is a calling, and you're called in it together as a family. So do you talk about that? Do you talk about what your purpose is? What is the mission? How do we go about it? And Claire, I wonder if you could come up and just share from your conversations with people, how do these conversations about mission look? And how do they influence people?
One of my favorites, one of my favorite things to do in the interview process has been getting both the parents and the kids' perspective. And one of the quotes stood out to me. One of the dads said, "We wanted to show our kids God showing up big, and we are praying together as a family." And then the interview of their 12-year-old son, he said, "Talking with my dad every night has changed a lot in me. When I talk to my dad, he's always helping me know how to lead again." And their regular habit of talking about what it means to be on mission, how to lead, how to walk as a leader, how to walk as a follower of Christ, has set in him a habit of maturity and of faith and of stepping into those places. And actually, one of the other things he said is, at the end of each day, we talk about how what we need to confess and how we need to be made right before God. And he said, now it's normal. That's something I always do. So that's amazing to see. And then another one was a girl who used to switched schools a couple of times, and she, instead of going into school nervous and unaware of what was going to happen, unsure of who she was going to talk to, her dad would tell her, "Kelsey, go look for someone who looks lonely." And she said, "I couldn't go in for myself then, because I had Christ, and that meant that I could keep my eyes on others." And there's an aspect of every time she would go into a new setting, her dad would remind her, this is what this is about. You're not alone because you have Christ, so you get to keep your eyes on other people.
All right. Yeah. Okay, super. Stay up here because I'm going to need you again for in a second. So that's a habit. By the way, yeah, just one of the things that my dad did, I remember when 12 years old, my dad would prepare his sermons at the kitchen table. And he'd be, Saturday night, he'd be preparing a sermon. And often about halfway through his preparation, he'd say, "Dave, come over here." I'd be reading a magazine in the living room. He said, "Come over here." He said, "I'm working hard on this message for tomorrow. And I just wonder what your thoughts are." And he would actually say, "I'm thinking of saying this or this and this illustration. Does that make sense to you? Do you think that what people would understand? You got any, have any feedback for me?" Now, at that age, I never did. Later on, I did. But at that age, I didn't. But what, it pretty amazing that he said, I'm preparing for a message. I invite you into that preparation. This is what I'm trying to accomplish. What do you think about that? How do you think it's going?" And so I got some homiletics training. My training on how to prepare a message started when I was 12 years old, when my dad was inviting me into his preparation and working on it together. And that actually ties into this next one, is learning by doing. Learning by doing and learning by doing together. So when my dad said, "Come, help me prepare," I watched my dad prepare and learned something from it. What are other ways, Claire, that, what are some of the ways what are your reflections on that? Go for it.
One of my favorite traditions that we had as a family was having family nights. And one day a week, we would gather together as a family and usually have Bible teaching, or sometimes when we were younger, it was crafts or worship night, something that tied us together as a family, but also moved us forward in our growth as well. And when we were teenagers, that became a lot more focused, and it was a lot more Bible teaching and practical skill teaching too. And two of the family nights that I remember most vividly, Sunday nights, was we had one that was on how do you teach, and my dad walked us through how do you even prepare a message similar to what he experienced as a kid. And the funny thing was then being at Bible college and realizing, oh, that was the same format. Oh, I see the connection now. So that was one of the things that then as I was serving in youth group, I was able to put those things into practice. And then also he had an evening, which I can't believe you thought to do this, but we practiced public speaking, because in Czech schools, I went to Czech national school my whole life, the most public speaking that we do is reading a report. There's nothing else that we do. We don't have debate. We don't have any kind of explanations up front, anything like that. So my dad pulled us together and taught us the five P's of speaking in front of people. And it's crazy, because then about 6 years later, I was at Moody, that's where I studied in Chicago, and they asked me to give a testimony at their annual Founders Week, which was a conference that they would do. So I was about to speak in front of 3,000 people on stage in the Moody Church in Chicago, and they were live streaming it, and I was so nervous and scared. And yet, the Lord was calming my heart. And also, when I got up there, I remembered my dad's P's about speaking. And one of them was position.
Yeah.
And it meant when you get up in front, you take a stand and you look out at people. And a lot of people, I guess, when they stand up to speak, will kind of shift their way and just start talking without actually looking at people. So that lesson that I learned as a teenager in our living room on our couches was something that then came to mind when I really needed it.
Okay. Yeah, stay up here for a minute. And actually, the reason that happened was our kids gave their testimony in church, and I watched them up front going like this and saying, and looking in the mic, and I went, oh, wow. We got to do some work on this. And so the next family night, I said, we're going to talk about speaking. And actually, we did lots of practice. I would say, okay, I want you to tell a story about something that happened this week in school. And they would stand up in the living room and tell the story to everyone else. And then we would critique them. And someone else would stand it. And actually, what was amazing was when they got instructions, they delivered actually pretty well. We also practiced telling stories. I said, here's how you tell a story. Okay, Claire, tell us a story. And then she told a story, and then the rest of us would give feedback. And it actually was quite a game. And I was surprised. You know, what's funny is that kids learn pretty quickly if they get good instruction. And they actually picked it up quite fast. But sometimes we just leave it to them on their own. So learning by doing. Now, another thing that we did when our kids were in high school was we wanted to teach them evangelism. So several years in a row, we did the Christmas Challenge. And our family Christmas Challenge was, before Christmas, we would together make a list of 10 most wanted. There's five of us in the family. Each of us got to pick two people that we were praying for their salvation. And then what we would pray for is the opportunity to share the gospel with them during the month of December, during the Christmas season. So we start praying for that together. We had our 10 most wanted. The first time we did that, Claire shared, you wrote a letter. Didn't you write a letter? Do you remember it?
I am now remembering it.
I didn't tell her she was going to do this. Yeah, and I think, who was it to? Do you remember? She wrote a letter to one of her friends.
The classmate.
It was Christy. I thought it was Christy. So she forgot. She wrote a letter to Christy, basically just saying, you know, I haven't told you anything about my relationship with God. I want to tell you more. And wrote all that out. My son Caleb took his friend out, who he'd been praying for, a guy named Thomas, and shared the gospel with him. My other son shared the gospel with his tutor. Connie shared the gospel with one of her friends. It got to the end of Christmas season, and I was the only one that hadn't shared the gospel with anyone. So I was feeling real bad as the head of this family who was way behind. And so I asked Claire to bake some cookies for me, and I used them as an excuse to go visit our neighbors, because you have to have an excuse in check. You can't just go visit. And so I said, my daughter baked some cookies, and I thought I'd bring some over. Yeah, and anyways, he invited me in, and we got in a great conversation. I got to share the gospel with him. Now, what's interesting is today, Christy is saved and in our church. Mm-hmm. And Tomasz is saved and has done an internship with us. His sister trusted Christ. And the gal that Connie shared the gospel with is saved. And so three of the five people that we shared the gospel with, they didn't trust Christ then, but today they're in Christ and following him, which is just really something. So that's also exciting that we know that together as a family, that together we've been involved in evangelism. Together we fought for people's souls. Together we prayed for each other. We thought, what can you do? What can you do, Claire? What would be you? And how could we open the door? And how could we do that together? And then God bless that. So actually, this goes into the next point, learning by doing and equipping for mission. So do things together. Pull them into various. One of our families just recently, they were at a youth conference in Slovakia that the parents were at, and they got their 12-year-old son to sell coffee. Uh-huh. And he just thought this was, you know, life ended. This was so great. And I know another friend of mine who serves, an Albanian who serves down in Albania, he's trying to keep his kids engaged in the ministry. He says, when I have a Bible study, I give my daughter, who's like six or something, the job of bringing us refreshments. Because I want to engage her somehow in this Bible study. You're a part of this Bible study. You're the one that brings in the water. That's your job. And that's what makes it possible for me to talk about God with these people. So sometimes it's very simple things, and we don't give them that job just to get the job done. It's actually the opportunity to join God in his work. It's a privilege. I remember when we were growing up, we used to garden a lot. And there was one time we sold a lot of vegetables off of our back porch. And my dad gardened. Well, you'll hear why my dad gardened in a minute. But one time we were selling vegetables and someone came in and said to my dad, is it profitable to raise vegetables? And my dad said, no, it's not. He said, but I'm not raising vegetables. I'm raising kids. And so the job serves a context for them to grow. And so it's not just I give my kids work so that we can get more work done. It's we look for ways that they can be engaged, because in that way they become part of it, just like God lets us get engaged in His work. He could do it all alone. He gives us the privilege of joining Him. And that's how we talk about it, by the way, the privilege of joining Him. And go ahead and just sit down. I'll call you up again in a minute. And this ties into the next one, sacrifice and service as a privilege. So how do you talk about your work? Do you come home and say, oh man, the church, oh, it's just so tough, problems all the time, why am I alone? How do you talk about your ministry when you're at home? One of the things that Connie had worked on, and she did a really good job, when I was gone and she was alone with the kids, how does she talk about the fact that I'm gone? Does she say, Dad's gone again, he's always out there, we have to handle it on our own? Or do we say, you know, we have the privilege of supporting Dad as he goes out there and speaks? The frame you set for the events actually deeply affects the way it's interpreted. Is this a burden? Well, Jesus said the burden was light. He said the person, when they understand the value of the treasure in the field, will sell everything to get it, the pearl of great price. It's such a privilege to follow God. And that's the frame that you need to set on everything you're doing. You could say, yeah, we're a family ministry, we're poor, you know, it's tough. But somehow we've got to, you should say, wow, we have a privilege. In fact, my dad, now I'm a missionary, I'm also a pastor, but my primary identity is a missionary. My dad used to say when we'd experience something interesting, we'd have interesting guests in our home or get to visit an interesting place, he'd say, these are the kind of experiences only millionaires and missionaries get to have. So he would just talk about the privilege of being in ministry. Do you know the people you can be around, the work? And that's the way he would talk about it. That's, I grew up thinking, as Charles Spurgeon said, if God calls you to be in ministry, don't stoop to be a king. You know, it's a high calling. So talk about your work as a high calling, that we have the privilege. Now, not as a proud, we're better than everyone else, but we've been invited into something really special from our Father. And sacrifice, service is a privilege. Here's another one, emotional availability. Here's one of the things that can happen in ministry families. I don't know if you've experienced this. You give and you give and you give all day long. You're ministering to all those people, and then you come home, and your family needs that same emotional energy, and you just don't have it. You know, you go, oh, now if I was working in a factory or in sales or something, it was totally different. But the emotional needs of my family are just very similar to the emotional needs of everyone in my life, and I need to take a break at home. And this was actually one of the things that I really struggled with. I would come home tired from day of interacting, and then all of a sudden, and I could go, now I'm at home, and I could kind of turn my emotional switch off. Now, I'd still be there physically present. I'd still interact, but I wasn't emotionally accessible. And actually, this is something my wife was really good saying. One time she said, Dave, we don't have your eyes. And I was like, what do you mean? I don't understand. My eyes are open. You know, I don't understand what you're saying. She said, you're physically home, but you're not emotionally present. You're not here with us. And she, at that time, said, I'm afraid of what that's going to do to the kids if they see you emotionally engaged out there, but emotionally distant home, because you're just trying to catch your breath. So there's a discipline to stay emotionally engaged at home, and maybe you need to go out for a long walk or stop partway home from the church to spend a little bit of time in prayer, but you need to be emotionally available to your kids. Claire, I don't know if you could say anything about this, and maybe you could say, how'd you feel when it wasn't true? Because sometimes it wasn't true. This was an area of battle for me. So.
Yes. It was, at one point in particular in my life, an area of tension between us.
It was.
I had, you know, that transition from childhood to teenage years is a tricky one for anyone. And that was a time when we were working out our relationship, too, and the aspect of it not really working. It was a little bit absent during that time. And as a kid, one of the things I loved was going on adventures with my dad, and he would take me along with my brothers, and we just were kind of a whole big pack. But as I grew and then was a teenager, I needed more of that one-on-one connection with my dad, and I wasn't getting it. And I didn't know how to ask for it either, because actually the thought of getting one-on-one time with my dad sounded really awkward. I was thinking, I don't even know what we're going to talk about if we sit across from each other.
She's a teenager.
Because we don't actually know each other that well when it comes to just our relationship. And at that time, my mom's best friend actually works with dad's and their daughters in Oregon. And she was sending out a questionnaire to a lot of people to help her in her work. And she sent me this questionnaire, and it was for me to answer questions about my dad. And I answered all those questions honestly because it was just for her. My dad wasn't going to be seeing it. And after she got it back, she said, Claire, you need to go share this with your dad. And I was like, no way. I am not sharing this with him. I was so nervous because a lot of those things were things I knew would be disappointing to him. And a lot of it had to do with feeling like he was distant from where I was at in life. So after much coaxing, she had to ask me about 3 times before I actually did it. And it wasn't until my mom was gone and I was kind of forced into conversation with my dad that I actually just handed him the questionnaire and just said, read this. I don't even know how to explain it. Just read it and then maybe we can talk about it. And my dad's response was the sweetest one. He said, I didn't know that that was what you were feeling and experiencing, and I want to do what it takes to fix it and to work through it. And that was a turning point for us in our relationship. We started going on dad-daughter dates together, and at the beginning it was super awkward. We didn't know what to talk about, so we would do activities together instead. We'd go horseback riding, or we would go hiking, and slowly that started to build into our relationship, so that then when he was home, it was a lot easier for both of us to be emotionally available to each other. And we had to talk about how to ask good questions. My dad would come into my room and say, what are you doing? And I felt so threatened as a teenager, like, it's fine, I'm doing everything I'm supposed to be doing.
I'm just trying to connect.
I'm doing my homework, I promise. Yeah. So I had to explain to him this question was threatening, not inviting. And so he was asking me, well, what question do you want me to ask instead? And so I enjoyed the question.
So
how are you feeling today?
Yeah, this is important. Yeah.
What question did he ask?
The question was, how are you feeling today?
Yeah. Yeah, which is, and I was totally missing her at this time and kind of feeling it, but really didn't know what to do. And it took a lot of courage for her. It also was not very fun to get that letter. You know, you want to be a good dad, and actually I thought things were going pretty well. And then I get my report card, and it wasn't very good. And you kind of go, oh, and the first you can start to feel defensive. You know, well, I'm trying. I'm doing my best. And I had to say, I'm trying. I'm doing my best, but I'm really missing my daughter. What I would do is I'd go by her room, I'd open the door, and I'd say, hey, Claire, what you doing? And I was like, hey, I want to connect. And she was like, oh, man, that is like you just opened the door and threw a bunch of cold water on me. And then she'd be defensive. I'd go, oh, I guess Claire doesn't want to talk, and close the door, and I'd go on. And so we were really missing each other. And so I was thinking she's not interested, and she was thinking, why is my dad always concerned about my performance? I'm a guy, you know, so I'm thinking, what are you doing? That's a good way to start the question. Oh, isn't that guys? Isn't that? Yeah, that's how to connect. What are you doing? And then I find out more about what I'm doing, tell someone what I'm doing, and, you know, then we'll really connect. And so she had to actually give me the sentence. And this is something you can do with your kids, is say, you know, give me the script. Tell me what I need to do. And the script was, how are you feeling? How are you feeling today? So remember that when you get, especially teenage girls. That's it. But that was, I just also have to say, really commend Claire for her honesty in that and being willing to, she was vulnerable in stepping out. So that really helped me. Okay, here's the final one. And this is a celebration. So someone said, you get what you celebrate. So do you celebrate? Do you celebrate when someone comes to know Jesus? Do you celebrate when... And what do you celebrate? Do you thank God? Do you give Him praise? You say, oh, wow, God, you're so amazing. Wow, God did this. Because that kind of family celebration, you the things you celebrate as a family tell about the things you value. And sometimes the things that families celebrate most are, oh, we get to get away and there's no people around. Oh, woohoo, far from people, yay! Well, if you celebrate that, then you're saying that that's the best. That's the top. Or do you get to celebrate God used us in the lives of someone? We were able to serve someone in a way that was eternal. Wow, we got invited into the work of God. We got to be there when we saw him change people's lives. Oh, wow. Cool. Amen. High five. Because the things you celebrate are the things that then are repeated. Okay, we are... Oh, there's my family now. Actually, it's just a little bit older, so Tyler's involved in training leaders in Czech and is involved in a church plant in Ostrava. Claire's working with missionary kids. Caleb and Haley are headed to Albania to serve the Lord in a city called Vlorë and share Jesus with people there. So they're all still, we're still family on mission. And another thing that's fun for me is that it's three generations now of family on mission. There's my mom and dad, who still, every time I'm with my dad, he's telling about someone he's discipling or about something new he learned from the Word of God, which is, he's 92, my mom's 90, so they're holding up, and which I'm glad for, because I want to live a long time too. There's my wife and I, and there's my son and one of my grandsons. It is such a joy to be family on mission, to be multi-generational family mission, be able to talk to my dad about the new things that he's learning from the Word of God, and to be able to talk to my son about what, it's precious, and I think God is all about family. And it's a joy when we get to serve them together. So time's up. Thank you for listening so well. If you have any questions, you can come up after. I want to also mention one thing. One of the things that has helped me the most in fathering is studying the Father Heart of God. And this book came out about 2 years ago. It was written from about 10 years of study in both trying to understand God's Father Heart and then pass it on to others. So how do I get connected with God as Father and then stream His Father Heart to others? Which really relates to a lot of these things that we've been talking about. There's copies of this in the back. In there's some copies in Czech if you want to get a Czech copy, and then some in English, and they'd just be 10 euros if you just want to put some money there and take it. But actually, I think getting connected with God as Father is one of the best things we can do to having healthy families, and then helping our kids get connected to God as Father so that they know that they have a Father that's better than this Father that's also watching out for them. So I just recommend that book to you. Thank you. It's on Amazon. You can order on Amazon, and you can order on Amazon. And you can order Kindle, and you can order Amazon Europe too. So you, if you want to get it that way, but it's just there in the back. So I just recommend that to you. Okay, thank you so much for your attention and being here together. If you got any questions, feel free to come up afterwards and ask.